welcome to the show. This is the Cult of Conspiracy, and my name is Jonathan.
I'm Jacob.
And today, I mean, could we have a cooler episode than what we're about to do right now? We're going to be talking to Space Force Captain, okay, Captain Chuck Ruffin. What's going on, dude?
How's it going? Happy to be here. Thanks for finding me on TikTok and, you know, shoot me a message and be like, dude, you'd be so cool to be on my show. I look forward to these. I mean, these are great, you know, exposure for the Space Force, and, you know, not like I'm a huge recruiter or anything, but it's really cool to talk about it because, you know, we can get into some weird conversations and we can get into some, you know, very cool conversations. So, yeah.
I prefer both, actually, you know, both weird and cool. Some of them, you know, you would say that they both go hand in hand for me anyway.
Absolutely.
Start off with your background. You were in the Air Force. Pretty much anybody from the NCO level on up in the Space Force was prior Air Force. If I'm not mistaken, the Space Force hasn't had their first full boot camp class drop, have they?
That's right. Yeah. So, all of our core force, if you will, our space operations officers on the commission side and our space operations folks on the enlisted side, they all came from the Air Force. And so the initial tranche of personnel that came over were all prior space operations members that were supporting missions on the Air Force side. That we actually had the option if we wanted to go into the Space Force or cross train. And a lot of us, you know, just came over, right? It was Space Force's first ever branch of service since 1947. Why not? So, you know, I commissioned in 2016. So when I commissioned, I was in the Air Force as a space operations officer and transferred, and I've been in the Space Force now for going over a year. So
will the Space Force have a warrant officer program as well?
No. Our biggest takeaway for warrant officers is that most of the services that do have a warrant officer program is because they needed to fill a gap with a technical expertise, right?
Sure.
And so all of our core force essentially are the technical expertise, regardless if you're enlisted or officers. So there's not necessarily a need for a warrant program. We offset a lot of our need by utilizing the civilian force, which makes up the majority of our numbers. We're about 16,000 strong, and only 6,000 are actual uniform members.
I was going to ask about that as well. Is there a Space Force Reserves program? Because I will re-up right now if I get to go to Space Force. This is not even a judgment call. I'm on board.
Yeah. There's no reserves at the moment. The reserves are guard program we haven't initiated yet. And, you know, it comes down to you know, congressional approvals, really.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily, we're only 16,000 strong, so having a reserve force is, there's not much there to support right now, so because we're all doing the mission right now.
Gotcha.
But it's been talked about, it's been, you know, brought up several different times, so who knows what the future looks like, right? So
sure. And so, all right, if you, and this is just in your basic overview, okay, what is the mission of the Space Force as opposed to what the mission of the Air Force was? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because for the longest time, the Army has pilots, Navy has pilots, Marine Corps has pilots. So the Air Force being the dominant pilot force, that's kind of been a debatable topic for a couple of decades now. So the Air Force meant more towards satellites and things like that, more so than any other branch, obviously. So what would be the Space Force's, how can I put this, company motto?
Yeah. So when you think about the branches of service, right, you have your Navy, you know, they're the commanders of the sea. Your Marine Corps, they're the most like, they're the insertion force, right, for the Navy. They're the ones that go in first, get the Navy's ground and hold it down for us until the Army comes in and takes over the land posture, right? So they're the ground pounders. Army comes in, does their work. And the Air Force, you know, they basically take command of the air. They are the air power, right? So you have your international forces being able to deploy your KC-135s and your strategic long-range bombers and your fighter aircraft that can launch from practically any platform, whether it's stateside or on a naval carrier.
Right.
Well, what the Space Force does is as it was a part of the Air Force, you know, we were kind of buried underneath the layers of the air power domain. So we weren't getting the focus we needed, but we were providing a lot of strategic overhead. For instance, in the Space Force now, what we do is we focus on managing the space domain. And that's not necessarily just using space to provide GPS. It's also keeping situational awareness of threats that are coming from adversary countries. For instance, China. You know, China and Russia have been developing long-range ballistic missile systems for decades.
Right.
And who's in charge of keeping watch of the skies? Well, the Air Force watches the skies. Who watches space when those long-range weapons go into space to traverse the country and get into, you know, strategic striking distance? The Space Force is the one providing the overhead systems that does that for us.
So will there be a Space Force representative team, any of that, on the International Space Station, for instance? Will there be a representation of some sort from the American Space Force in the future?
Well, so all of our prior astronauts that used to belong to the Air Force program are all now moved over to the Space Force. So, for instance, the previous commander that was on the ISS, he actually transferred over from the Air Force into the Space Force while he was on board the International Space Station. So that was really cool, like historical moment. You know, the Space Force was doing. Yeah, he transferred over into the Space Force while he was on the International Space Station. So talk about like badass, right? You know.
Wow,
that is sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Space Ranger in Spaceman. Well, actually, yeah. Excuse me. But yeah, that's legit.
I mean, I was just letting you two military heads talk there for a little minute. I wanted to join the military. My dad, you know, just kept on telling me, "Oh, it's, you know, you don't want to join the military with Obama in office, and then you don't want to join the military with Trump in office." I'm like, okay, well, there goes my time.
That's arguably a very good point, though. It depends on you gotta understand, certain administrations put more funding towards the military, and certain administrations cut funding.
Yeah.
The military. I'm not putting
that's true
one or the other. I'm just gonna say there's a time and place for everything, bro.
So. Yeah, I've been in the military since 2005, so I've seen my fair share of change in administrations. And you know, you're right, exactly. You hit the nail on the head. You know, some administrations focus heavily on the military and put tons of funding towards it. Some other administrations are like, well, we still need it. We'll keep it operational and relevant and give them the needs when they need it. But as far as adding more to the budget, not so much. And that's just the way it is. You know, that's just the way the world works.
Right. You said
for us anyways.
Oh, five.
Yes, oh, 05.
So you do they all call them Mustangs in the Air Force as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I was a Mustang. I was prior enlisted 11 years. I was a prior intel analyst.
Ah, so that's why you were an asset to the Space Force. I'm with you. Because that was my next question as well. What is your MOS? And don't give me letters and numbers. I do not know Air Force or Space Force things. I only know Marine Corps grunt things. So
right.
So your job title is intel.
Well, my job title was intel. Now I'm a space operations officer with an intel kind of like a background. So my focus is primarily space operations. I do satellite command and control, missile warning, missile defense, that kind of stuff, but on the intelligence side.
Okay. So.
Chuck, I want to ask you a question. So back whenever the Space Force was first created, I know that it had been talked about for probably decades, and I think there was, I can't remember which president that initially brought it up, but whenever Trump started it, what was it, 2018, 2019, something like that?
Yeah.
There was a lot of people making fun of the idea of a space force. And I was kind of curious, like, you know, you had that actor, Steve Carell, and he, you know, he had that Netflix movie about space force,
which was really funny,
but it was basically making fun of.
I watched the whole series. I'm actually looking forward to the next one. So
here's the deal though, in the military, you have to be able to laugh at yourself. That's a huge deal.
Sure. Sure. But
I mean, they made Jarhead, right? So,
oh my God, which I hate that actor, but you know,
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh my God. He's so disgusting and off-putting. That's just me.
But yeah, whenever they were laughing, you know, a lot of people were laughing. I don't know if it was just because it was Trump that that, you know, it happened during Trump's term or whatever. You know, they kind of made fun of everything that he did.
Right.
So that's why I wasn't really surprised. I mean, I kind of was kind of surprised because you're talking about a whole nother branch of a military service, the sixth military branch, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. And so you would think that you, I don't know. I mean, that sounds like awesome. I mean, the Space Force, and it just came around the time whenever, you know, everybody was coming at us, going, you know, talking to the government, demanding, what do we have on aliens and UFOs? And then, you know, Trump released some kind of document, or he asked, what was it?
He basically released the document saying, like, look, we know there's UFOs. We don't know what the fuck they are, but we know they're there. And he pretty much deuced out on that note. That was where he left it for the world. And it was like, wait, what? He's like, not in office anymore. Y'all figure it out.
Yep. He's like, I'll just drop this, like the microphone, and watch my way out.
Right. It was a few months before he left office.
Yeah.
He just dropped
it. Yeah, it was wild.
I mean, it's probably because he heard. I mean, he sounds like he's into conspiracies as well. And I mean, I love him for that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say is that, you know, there's actually the conspiracy out there that Eisenhower supposedly met up with some aliens, and that he was out on some golf course or something like that, met up with some aliens, somehow made a deal. And then right after Eisenhower was done being president, that's whenever JFK, I believe, was right after him, I want to say.
I'd have to open the history.
I'm pretty sure JFK was right after Eisenhower. But anyway, Eisenhower supposedly briefed JFK on the aliens. And for a lack of a better term, I mean, you ask Katy Perry, or what's her name?
Oh, God.
The singer.
What, name any female singer.
Demi Lovato. Demi Lovato. Yeah. She goes, it's like racist to call them aliens or something like that. She wants them to be called ETs, which is kind of funny.
Extraterrestrial, or whatever.
Extraterrestrial.
She said it was racist to call them aliens?
She said some dumb shit like that, but I did want to get your opinion on that whole thing. I mean, you know, you're in the Space Force, dude.
I know.
There's got to be some alien thing that you know of. There's got to be one tiny detail.
I don't actually. It's crazy enough. Like, so yes, the Space Force is wild. You know, we have tons of really awesome missions, and you know, a part of the Space Force when it first came out. I'll be honest. When it first came out, the Trump administration basically dropped the paperwork. The National Defense Authorization Act came out, and it said upon activation of the sixth military branch of service, United States Space Force will become active upon at such and such date. Right. That was the first we had ever seen it, and an entire team of people that were in charge of making things happen, they were like, oh crap, like we thought we had X amount of years before this was coming out, or X amount of months before they were going to do this, right? Well, no, he dropped the NDAA paperwork, it was in there, boom, the service had to start. So General Raymond and his whole entire cohort of teams had to stand up a brand new branch of service, and what they focused on was bringing in the main mission sets.
Awesome.
And then
go ahead.
I was going to say, and then what happened is, you know, you also saw the alien footage come out, right? You saw the naval pilot, you know, that alien footage came out. Then there was somehow a documentary on Netflix talking about, you know, the government has had this program running for a while where they've been doing research on alien encounters. And, you know, these officials have apparently met with them and was like, well, crap, well, how is this going to make the Space Force look? Because the very first thing that people are going to do is like, man, it's a giant conspiracy theory. There's freaking aliens everywhere. The Space Force is going to fight us a war. You know, so it's like, what's going to happen, you know? But oddly enough, majority of the Space Force folks have no idea about anything with regards to the aliens. And I know that's very sad to say, and hopefully I don't let down your hearers, listeners, you know. Is there a program out there? Apparently there is one. How closely tied it is to the Space Force, I don't really know. My personal job has come from, you know, satellite command and control, you know, so I don't really have insight into that stuff personally. But who knows?
It made sense to me that because America, whether we like it or not, we are the world's police force. I mean, I know that we don't like that mantle. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But either way it goes, it is our cross to bear, so to speak, because we're the only ones that can or will. So whenever we're at a place where not just a few countries, but more and more countries are getting space access. And not only that, but now we have civilians who are now getting space access. it makes sense to me that the U.S. government would want to at least in some way wrangle that in and somehow have their say so in the matter. So it makes sense that the Space Force would come up. However, all right, so how closely does the Space Force, as of now, granted it's very young, understand that.
Yeah.
How closely does the Space Force work with, like, for instance, NASA? I'm assuming that's literally like your sister organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So upon activation from the Space Force, one of the very first memorandums that was ever signed was an agreement between the Space Force and NASA. And that was ultimately to establish the continuation of their support for space launches and science and, you know, you name the things, right? So it is a federal funded body. You know, NASA gets their funding from the federal government. So, you know, it's only right to partner up with the Space Force. That's going to be the DoD component, you know, the national defense side. So if you look at it, it's very close hold, you know, to have the national defense side partnership with the federally funded body that's more scientific and outward. So it's interesting to see that partnership was kind of one of the first ones established. And, you know, we actually partner a lot with civilian industry across the board. SpaceX has been funded to send rockets into space with, you know, military payloads on them, to include our own astronauts, you know, going to International Space Station. So the civilian force is definitely going to be our, if you will, like, you know, our power builder, right? They're going to empower the Space Force in a lot of ways. So it's critical that we learn the legalities between those partnerships and not establish so much red tape where it restricts us from being successful and, you know, being pioneers, you know, honestly. So it's a unique time, and you're right, you know, we're still young, so we're learning all of the things, you know. Congress has to allow some of those things to happen.
And that's
so it takes,
you said red tape. I could see this being mountains of red tape to get done. But at the same time, I also want to ask you this. You being of an Air Force background, y'all got the most funding of any branch ever. And I'm wondering, is that still the case, or is the Space Force now kind of getting the most funding?
The Space Force, believe it or not, is getting some of the funding, but we're leveraging the Air Force as our support force. So much like the Navy and the Marine Corps are tied together, the Navy does all of the military personnel functions for the Marine Corps. We're the similar, you know, in that sense. So we don't have any support forces like medical, manpower management, you know, those kinds of things. It's all ran by the Air Force. So our budget is cut out, you know, a piece of the pie really is given to us in the Space Force. And
y'all are still getting more funding than the Marine Corps, even though y'all are getting cut from the Air Force budget. Guaranteed.
I would say that some of the programs that are in design most likely will get, you know, a large part of the budget, but those are also long time periods too. So our acquisitions timeline goes from anywhere between 10 to like 25 years.
I was going to say, it's not like this is a, okay, we need 10 trucks, you know, bought, and you just don't even commission to build them. You're talking about fucking rockets.
Rockets, satellites, you know, anything, you name it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how does one go about joining the Space Force? I've been very curious about that because I looked online. I can't even find any kind of recruiter whatsoever to even join this shit.
Yeah, we don't have our own recruiting offices at the moment.
Sure.
The Space Force, again, we use the Air Force. So if someone was interested, walk into an Air Force recruiter's office and say, hey, I'm interested in joining the Space Force. And they'll be able to process you into the Space Force. From what I've heard, we use pretty much like open forums to get a lot of our information sharing. So believe it or not, you can learn a lot on Reddit. If you go to Reddit and go to the Space Force channel, you can learn a lot from there about the inner workings of how the Space Force is going. People post comments on there, and we have leadership that's in there, and they reply. So it's actually really kind of unique. But yes, I guess there was a backlog of so many people wanting to join, and we have a maximum capacity for like 500 per year right now. It's pretty small. And we're very meticulous on who we select as well. So we're not just letting in, like, you know, Joe Schmo.
Right.
You have to have a pretty substantial background.
I was gonna
You don't have to come in with a master's degree or anything, but You have to be intelligent, right?
I was assuming you had to have a higher ASVAB. You had to have a higher. I don't even know if y'all care about the GT score or if y'all are more worried about other shit on the ASVAB. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know what they care about these days. It's been a long time for me.
Fair. That's fair.
Chuck, I want to get down to the nitty gritty.
Here we go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Have you been? Let's do it. Have you been to space?
No, unfortunately. The highest I've been is 40,000 feet, and that was in a B-52 many years ago. So
that sucks.
Is there any plans of you going to space?
There's a possibility. I'm applying to weapons school now. So if I get my weapons school candidate seat selection, I'll go next summer. And really that kind of puts me on the pathway to pretty much go in any direction I want to in the Space Force. And to become an astronaut, you have to go through extensive training. And one of the check boxes is they look at your background. And with me being a weapons officer, it kind of puts me in a better position to go that route on the technical side, not as like a pilot or commander or anything like that. But
kind of weapons training does the Space Force have? Because now you've got the 5-year-old man is like, please tell me you're getting trained in laser cannons.
Sharks, giant freaking lasers.
Sharks, lasers, giant freaking lasers. Yeah, so our weapon systems are essentially our satellite systems. We name them weapons, even though they're not like weaponized systems that, you know, they don't shoot like ions.
That we know of. Or,
yeah, that I know of.
Right.
So yeah, there's nothing coming from space down to Earth. That would be a total like a treaty violation in many ways if we had anything like that. But essentially, the weapons officer, what you do is you become an expert on systems that we field. So ballistic missile early warning radar systems. There's three gigantic radars that are on the two on the coastline, west side and east side, and then one up north up in Cavalier. That kind of looks over the horizon. And that's just one weapon system. And then we have our overhead systems like GPS navigation and OKR. Those are also weapon systems technically.
So yeah. When you say it would be a treaty violation in order to send something from space down to Earth, who is that treaty formed with? Is it formed with the Galactic Federation?
No, I've heard the Galactic Federation too. You know what? I had to do my homework on this because as a TikTok guy, you know, I get all the folks like, is you're a part of the Galactic Federation or, you know, they signed the treaty with the aliens or whatnot. And I'm like, I don't even know are you talking about, you know, Deep Space Nine or something? Like what is this? Like, are you talking about Star Trek? So I don't even know much about it, honestly. And, I'm a bummer.
It's some kind of special counsel. Maybe aliens from outer space from different planets. I don't know if it has to do with, you know, the Andromeda people or the people or whatever. I don't know. Maybe it's the lizard people, dude. Do you believe in lizard people? Do you believe in
the lizard? The lizard people are, you know, they have the hieroglyphs in Egypt or whatever. They have like the pictures of the lizard people. My mind was blown when I saw that. I watched the documentary too. I think it was like Dr. Greer or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, he has like the fifth kind, whatever. What is that called?
Yeah.
Something about the fifth kind.
Yeah. Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Stephen Greer. It's, something of the fifth kind. Damn, I can't remember what it's called now either.
We're on this shit, man.
I know.
I haven't even seen that tells you how kind of conspiracy that
but
I am.
Yeah, he has this program called CE5 in which he does some sort of meditation and is somehow able to sync up.
Communicate.
In touch with some kind of, they kind of look like orbs, but supposedly they took pictures and stuff like that. And it looks like actual beings in some kind of life form. Damn. It's very cool. Close Encounters of the Kind. That's what it is.
Yep, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Yep, and I watched the documentary, and it, you know, that stuff intrigues me because I want to know what people are experiencing too. Because, you know, if the Space Force, if shit hits the fan, man, like, I got to make sure my people know. You know what I'm talking about? Like, people are trying to communicate with them, and you know, if things go south, they're gonna want to need somebody to help them, you know, protect them. So,
not gonna lie, I was kind of bummed when you said the weapons training you were gonna get wasn't for a spaceship door gunner. I was really hoping that that was in the cards somewhere.
Yeah, I put that on my resume, like spaceship door gunner, you know, just so that way I can see how far it would get. But it only made it about as far as my chain of command, and that's it. So.
Dang.
Yeah. Who is, do y'all have a commandant, or do y'all call him something else?
Like our command chief, or
your four-star that's sitting on the joint chiefs is?
Yeah, so we call him a chief of space operations. His name is General Raymond, John J. Raymond.
Okay, and then y'all have y'all kept the same, correct me if I'm wrong, the same names per the enlisted ranks. You have a sergeant major of the Air Force?
We have, so all the enlisted ranks came over from the Air Force, the same. We changed the first four ranks. So our E1 through E4 are specialists, and then our E5 is a sergeant to kind of line up with other military branches. Okay. That's the only thing that's changed as far as the sergeant major did come over from the Army, and he is now a Space Force guardian, but he's not a sergeant major anymore. He's a chief, E9, right?
Imagine that, being a soldier and then going to the Space Force, Air Force and Space Force, I see that jump. An Army sergeant major jumping on over to the Space Force.
Dude, you need Army personnel for, an alien invasion. Yeah. Now, I did want to ask you, so, you're saying that basically the Space Force is there set up, just to be able to watch out for anything, any kind of missiles or anything being shot from other countries, and basically just to protect us. Is there any cameras? Is there any kind of supervision outward, not looking at Earth? Is there anything that are we looking for meteors? Are we looking for strange objects? I mean, is there anything like that that you know of?
Not on the government side. I do know on the civilian side, like have you heard of the OSIRIS-REx program?
Yes, we have.
Yep. OSIRIS-REx, they went to Bennu. They did the whole touch and go grab of the materials and come back. I do know in one of our programs, there is kind of like an asteroid monitoring branch. That's our space domain awareness folks. And they kind of keep an eye on what we call not collision avoidance, but conjunctions. And so if you get anything within a close proximity, if it's a foreign object, a satellite or asteroid, they report that, right? So we have kind of our eyes in the sky, kind of keeping an eye on things. Thankfully, a lot of those asteroids that we do know of are several hundreds of miles away. But they're close enough to be like, hey, it's only a couple hundred miles away. Sure. So
the civilian side handling that?
Yeah, a lot of the civilian side handles that. You know, we have our space domain awareness folks, as I mentioned. We have what's called a space fence. And the space fence is held out at Kwajalein Islands. So if you look up Kwajalein Islands space fence, you'll see kind of what our radar capability is. It's all open source, and a lot of the data they put out is open source as well. So they track all kinds of objects. I think over 10,000 different objects that are kind of orbiting Earth. Asteroids, there's another defense team that does the asteroid monitoring system, but I don't know those guys specifically. I know the program exists, but I don't know too much about it.
Got you.
Well, yeah, there's all kind of space junk and like old broken satellites and stuff up there. I'm sure that is kind of forming what I do believe is called the what was the name of that word? The belt. What's the belt called?
It's like a meteor belt, but like full of space shit.
Yeah.
It's full of space junk.
Yeah.
Space junk belt.
Yeah, right. I mean, there is like a,
Well, I mean, I'm actually curious. You would actually be able to answer this question more intelligently than I could. How many satellites are up in space as we speak right now that we know of? Ballpark estimate.
Yeah, you know what? I wish I had my notes with me because I just briefed this the other day. So there's approximately 4,000 satellite objects that are out there in space now. The majority of them that are actually active is actually far less than that. There's a lot more inactive satellites than there are active ones. A lot of them are in the LEO and GEO belt. So you're looking at systems that are closer to Earth, like Earth observation satellites that do like your weather, your satellite communications, those types of things. And there's a ton of space debris. We're tracking over 10,000 different objects in space, to include satellites and space debris. And a lot of that space debris that is out there now was caused between two satellites that did collide back in 2007. It was a Chinese satellite and an Iridium communications satellite. They basically made contact and blew to pieces everything. And now there's like a belt of debris that you mentioned, which I know what you're talking about, but I just don't know the name.
The Van Allen radiation belt is what I was referring to. The Van Allen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the one that everybody says that we haven't been able to pass through.
Right. And that's the, that's really the argument as to, you know, I hope this doesn't disrespect you in any way. And I don't even
know. You're totally fine.
I don't even know that if it does, but I don't believe that we went to the moon at all. All right. I'm open-minded, but okay. I will say that entire night, what was it, 1969, 1968?
That video
that
was
whole
fake
thing, that is the fakest thing I've ever seen. I could,
right.
My daughter, who is 9, could film something better than that. And I actually got a couple clips that I would like to get into, because Neil Armstrong and what was his
Buzz
boy?
Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin, they were approached. They were approached to, you know, to tell the truth on camera if they ever truly went.
Buzz Aldrin's also hit a few people for saying he never went.
He has, a couple of people. He's straight laid them out. Yeah.
Yes, I do want to show you this, dude, because this is.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is insane.
So I'm hugely curious about all this information, too, because I'll just take a listen first.
So this is Neil Armstrong. He's being confronted about the Apollo 11 moon landing. And just check it out, man. It's freaking amazing. It's pretty crazy.
Mr. Armstrong, Park Central, ABC Digital. Wanted to give you the opportunity to swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon. Will you put your left hand on the Bible and swear to God that you walked on the moon?
Gentlemen. Mr. Sarpel.
Yes. If you really walked on the moon, why will you not do that? So why don't you just put the end to the record in the argument and put your hand on the Bible, swear to God you walked on the moon.
Mr. Sarpel, knowing you, that's probably a fake Bible.
Really? Well, no, it's a real Bible.
You have the opportunity to $5,000. The meeting is not open.
Well, yeah, $5,000 cash. You can give it to charity if you swear on the Bible that you walked on the moon.
Please,
I have the case.
Sure. It'd be fine.
Why don't you swear to? Why not? Why won't you do it? So why don't you put your hand on the Bible and swear to God that you walked on the moon?
Mr. Sarpel is a fool of himself in front of the world. Mr. Sarpel, you do not deserve.
Dude, what is that about?
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've seen these encounters. Actually, that guy, he's approached him several times, right, with the whole Bible thing, like swear on the Bible.
Right.
And I think there was one point where he had an encounter, and he finally like receded after one of his last encounters. And I don't remember exactly the whole context behind it, but Neil Armstrong has always come back from, you know, every time those encounters happen, he goes, why do I need to swear on the Bible whenever I know it's been true? It's like, if he doesn't want to believe me, I don't need to swear about it, you know, in front of so many people. And I'm like, it's an honorable question, but I mean, it's a simple thing too, to submit the request, right? Like, yeah, go ahead and just do it. You know?
I mean, imagine your wife approaching you with the idea.
Yeah.
Put your hand on the Bible, tell me you never cheated on me. Why do I need to prove it to you?
Why do I have to put it on the Bible?
You know what I'm saying? Why wouldn't you just do it?
Yeah.
I mean, Andy was about to get $5,000 to donate to a specific charity.
Yeah.
No.
So, I mean, that guy doesn't need it. He sells freaking artwork for twice that much with his signature on it.
Right. It's just, you know, the principle.
If that is not true, then the Masons would also be very upset about it, because apparently one of the first flags flown on the moon was a Masonic flag that's hung up in the Grand Hall in Britain. So, looks like they lying to every motherfucking body, if that's true. Yeah.
Dude. Oh, I wanted to tell you. Guess who is just now about to join the Freemasons?
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Pat. Dude, we had so many. My previous co-host. We've had so many, you know, Illuminati, Freemason type shows.
Yeah.
And we broke it down. And we studied it like crazy. And we all understand that basically, you know,
we know what it is.
We know what it is, dude. It's not at the highest levels, the 33rd degree, the 32nd degree, these Master Masons, not a lot of good stuff coming out of there. I'm just throwing that out there. Unless you're a Freemason yourself, are you?
I grew up in family that have been Freemasons. I come from the South, so it's a pretty prominent thing. You know, my grandfather has a Mason ring and a Mason. Actually, I have his Freemason watch. So I grew up in the family, you know, about it. I'm not a Mason myself.
Gotcha.
But I know enough about it to, you know.
Say upper echelon military, a lot of them are Freemasons.
Probably, yeah, I would imagine.
It's true.
When I was in D.C., bro, you couldn't drive near the Pentagon without seeing a fuck ton of symbols on cars and shit.
Oh, yeah.
It was the way it is.
You see them all over here in Alabama, like pretty much every other vehicle. If you don't see a Freemason sticker, you're kind of out of place.
I mean, it's all over the place in general. I mean, the dollar bill, there's Facebook, there's, you know, the App Store, there's baseball field, which is entirely, you know, the design
of the baseball field.
Yeah, it's completely Masonic.
the going to the moon thing. So I'll tell you an interesting story, and it was actually one of my recent experiences. Did you know any of the former NASA administrators, like Jim Bridenstine, by chance?
I've heard the name, don't know much.
No. So in the previous administration, Jim Bridenstine was the NASA administrator, and you know, he would always get approached with those same comments about going to the moon. You know, like, hey, did we really go or not? You know, that was the kind of a regular question. And Space Force, we're getting that same thing. But I actually got a chance to meet him in person and hear his own personal words about, like, how he responds with it. And his number one thing is, you know, most people only remember or recall the one event. He goes, we've actually put 12 Americans on the moon on 6 different missions. And so he goes, most when you talk about people going to the moon, they only recall the one. And then he goes, trust me, I've heard everything about the Van Allen radiation belt. You know, there was a lot of science projects. If you look into Operation Dominic, that was a very old operation. You know, they launched some weapons up into space to see if they can get through the radiation belt. And, you know, they learned the science from there. And they were able to develop their systems that could kind of defeat, you know, the radiation belt. And ultimately what it led to was us developing a path, you know, from launch to out into space to get kind of around the radiation belt and through some of it, but not through the majority of it. So there's, you know, there's a lot of science behind the ways we got to it, but you just have to, like you said, got to keep an open mind. Whether the first one was a fluke or not, I don't know. During the space race, there was a lot of things happening at that time. You know, in the 60s, it was very contentious with the Russians shooting up a satellite. You know, it just sent down a few beeps and squeaks. But the Americans at that point were losing our minds. Plus, we're also losing our stature, you know. Across the world. And what do that? You develop a space program in less than 6 to 8 months to get someone to the moon. And that was your main goal. Whether you failed or not, you're getting there.
Right.
So,
well, and you can't really forget about how NASA was really formed in the first place.
Paperclip.
Operation Paperclip, bringing over the Nazi. And,
yeah.
Von
Braun.
I mean,
Von Braun was
Werner von Braun.
Von Braun. Yeah, they brought over 1,600 German scientists straight out of the Nazi party. Werner von Braun being the biggest one. And I'm sure you've heard of this. I mean, a lot of flat earth people like to bring this point up. And I'm not a flat earther. I'm not a flat earther. I'm very open-minded to a lot of things, though.
Right.
I like to, you know, I'm not somebody that is immediately going to shoot something down the first time I hear it. I'll be like, oh, why do you think that? You know what I mean? I will say,
I'm the same way. I'll entertain anything. Like, I mean, I don't know what I don't know. So if you have tons of information about a topic that I've never heard of, by all means, I'll listen.
Right. So I want to share this screen right quick. Have you ever heard of what was on Wernher von Braun's tombstone whenever he died?
No, not that I know of.
This is his tombstone right here. Wernher von Braun, 1912 to 1977. He had a Bible verse on there.
Right.
Psalms 19:1. All right. Now, what's crazy about that whole thing is that I didn't know what Psalms 19:1 was, so I decided to look it up myself. And here we go. This is Jacob's favorite version of the Bible, the King James Version.
Indeed.
To the chief musician, a psalm of David. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Okay, so... Yeah,
the firmament, yes.
Now, this is on this dude's tombstone, right? This is on this dude's tombstone. Wernher von Braun helped create NASA, came over from, you know, Nazi Germany whenever they were on all kind, like another level of science going on over there. They didn't, there was no morality that was going on.
Yeah. Rocket science back then was no joke. Yeah, it was.
So, I mean, my question would be, what the hell is that guy talking about the firmament for?
Yeah. Why would something like that be on his headstone, you know, with a scripture referencing something that is related to space, but also is related to a boundary of space that, you know, he basically spent his entire life looking to get through, right? with rocketry. So,
right, yeah. Right. I mean, this is back, you know, back in the day. I mean, they, a lot of people thought that the Earth was flat, like, you know, a couple hundred years ago.
Shit, we still do, which I wanted to ask you that too. How often do you get hit with flat earthers with the random questions?
All the time, man. I've got an Instagram that this guy pretty much berates me regularly, like every single day. Maybe he'll go a few weeks or so between time periods and he'll spit out his garbly gook and I'll reply with mine. And then I get it on TikTok too. You know, they'll comment. I actually got one person on my latest video. His TikTok, like his picture is the NASA symbol with the meatball, but it says liars. And he's been like posting tons of comments about the flat earth thing. And he's like, if you can prove to me that the earth is actually round, I'll give you 3 Bitcoin. I'm like, I have my own Bitcoin, but okay, sure.
That you dude know. Does not have 3 Bitcoin. No, that dude does not have 3 Bitcoin. I'm just going to throw that out there. However, it is crazy whenever we're talking about NASA, first of all, like just how we were talked about, it was you know, basically helped brought up by the Nazis. And then, I don't know if you're aware of this, NASA in Hebrew translates to deceive.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that too.
Of all things, to deceive. Yeah. I mean, if there
I don't think that was intentional though. I mean, NASA is an acronym, you know, ultimately.
Right.
Sure, you would think. Yeah. I understand why people would think that, but there's another thing. There's another famous quote by a CIA director way back in the day. I believe this was back in the 60s. CIA director William Casey. He had a famous quote saying, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the United States public believes is false." So you take that comment and that way of thinking, and then you take NASA, which translates in Hebrew loosely, maybe, I'm not sure, to deceive, and then you got NASA, and it looks like a freaking snake. A snake tongue is
a snake's tongue, like the serpent's tongue. Yep. Yeah.
And then there's so many videos, dude, of all the people up on the International Space Station. And it looks like, oh, well, look, we're floating around. But then you see the cords that are attached to them. And it's like, this looks fake as hell. It looks fake. Like everything. It's just so crazy, dude. I don't know what to believe.
Yeah. It's, you know, so I don't disagree. Like there's a ton of evidence out there you know, material to really prove a person's point, you know, that, hey, yeah, the earth is flat. You know, we've never been beyond whatever feet, or we've never been to space. There's no one in space because all these things look really fake. How can I, as the regular everyday one of 327 million people, really believe that we have someone on a floating satellite, you know? And unless you become a space operations officer like myself, or if you work in the field of government that's directly associated to it, which, you know, I mentioned there's only 16,000 of us. It's a drop in the bucket, you know, in comparison to the millions of people who have regular access to information at a moment's notice, you know, within seconds. And you could pretty much prove your own point and have solid arguments in an instant, you know, and you can have a solid argument in 30 minutes or less to prove any point you want. So,
well, we're in the age of information. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I do want to clarify though. I'm not trying to make a point for the earth being.
Oh no. Yeah. I get it.
All I do want to say is that, you know, some of the extra points that they bring up, in relation, such as, you know, NASA and Wernher von Braun and stuff like that. I did want to get your opinion. Do you know of, Admiral Richard Byrd? Have you heard of this guy?
No, I haven't. No.
Back in the day, I want to say back in the 40s or 50s, Admiral Byrd, he had the exploration, and you know, he went all the way around the world. He went to the North Pole, he went to the South Pole, and he discovered that beyond the South Pole and kind of right at the North Pole and right at the South Pole, there was two giant openings, almost as though looking like there was a center of the Earth. All right. Mm. And this was very well documented in the new Godzilla movie. Throw that out there.
The new Godzilla movie, okay.
Dude, it was awesome. It was an awesome movie.
Actually did do this, and it actually his flight reports, his flight logs actually show him speaking on what he was seeing. So you know, there was something that was said.
And this is why a lot of people will say, well, I don't know. You know, whenever they're talking about extraterrestrials. You know, you think about what terrestrial means. That just means like territory, right?
Yeah, territory, right.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they come from space, but maybe there's land beyond the poles, land beyond South Pole, land beyond the North Pole, because this is what Admiral Byrd was reporting, is that there was land beyond the North Pole and beyond the South Pole, that it wasn't just all snow-covered and ice caps everywhere, that there was actually like blooming rainforest and everything was like perfect beyond the poles, and then it gets you. But here's the crazy thing, though, right? I mean, that sounds kind of crazy, right? Whenever we're talking about Hollow Earth or anything beyond the North and South Pole,
the underworld,
right? Yeah. But the crazy thing is then you look up. There's the Antarctic Peace Treaty, the Antarctic Peace Treaty, which was signed by leaders of 60 plus odd countries that basically prohibit the average Joe from even going there, going down to Antarctica. And now
I had my first experience with the Antarctic Peace Treaty, and somebody had blown up my TikTok once again. And he was like, Antarctic Peace. Actually, it was the dude that did the Instagram thing.
Sure.
He found me on TikTok, went to Instagram and filled up my inbox. And yeah, you know, I was like, I've never heard of this ever, you know, I've never heard of this peace treaty before. You know, it's not something that's an official like military document. So why would I look at it? Right.
Right.
So I had to do my own homework on it. I'm like, yeah, this thing is circulating the interwebs as an official document, you know, signed by X amount of countries. And you know, how long has this thing been around, or what does the actual verbiage say? And you know, it took me a while to read through it, but yeah, it was kind of interesting. Yeah.
I mean, no, supposedly you can go, but the only way that you can go is if you have, you know, like a tour guide, so to say.
Yeah.
And there's only certain places that you can go. Now, I mean, that just sounds kind of crazy, especially whenever Admiral Byrd was talking about, like, there were so many resources and so many minerals and such Antarctica is rich of. And so maybe that's why the Antarctic Peace Treaty was, you know, maybe it was just to be able to share those kind of products or whatever. My question is, how the hell did you get that many countries to agree on one thing? You know what I'm saying?
People don't share well as far as resources go.
Right.
When I looked into it on like the military side of things, you know, I was like, well, I want to see what the reality is between the treaty and, you know, what's really going on.
Sure.
And what I found out, so I have friends that fly C-130s, and they've been to Antarctica, and they've flown scientists from, you know, the U.S. over to Antarctica and have, you know, landed there on skids and have been there for several months, even for all the equipment and loads and stuff that they do. They just do rotations in and out. Looking at it closely, it ended up being, you know, I think Antarctica is the only thing of land that doesn't have a staked like one main land owner. You know, it's not owned by one country, it's owned by multiple countries,
right?
And purely the treaty, you know, from a government standpoint, was for the benefit of science and, you know, to learn more about our Earth and how Earth has evolved over the thousands of years it's been around, or millions of years, whatever timeline you want to be on. And you know, that's kind of where I've seen my resources of information come from. It's like, okay, it's kind of interesting, you know, the preservation of life. You know, you kind of want to make sure that your science experiments aren't going to be just open to the general public, right? Because you want to contain that environment to really learn from it. And,
otherwise, you know,
exposing it,
pleasing the dogs, that's what happens. And science experiments.
Yeah. But honestly, I have no passion to go to Antarctica. That's too damn cold for me. So
heard that.
Well, yeah. Maybe if you go far enough, it won't be so cold. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Throw that out there.
Yeah, it might be a bright sunshine down there. It might be too warm for anything. Yeah.
I want to ask you about this, you with the satellites. Why doesn't America have some sort of a military outpost in Antarctica strictly for the sense of monitoring ship in the South Pole? I feel like that would make sense.
We do a lot of our monitoring with overhead systems, but anything that far south, we don't typically monitor just because there's not much down there besides Antarctica. Most of our sea traffic, you know, they go through South America and back around. Anything further south than that, they don't really go out to those parts of the seas, you know, to traverse, you know, to send cargo or anything. Most of our ground stations are equatorial, if you will.
Sure. Which, again, is most of human life.
Yeah, really. You know, that's where all the heat is, right?
Right.
We do have ground stations that are kind of popped up all over the world, but most of them are equatorial, and that's purely because of the passing of the direction of satellites. You know, some of them are going over the North Poles and South Pole. Some of them kind of go equatorial, and then bidirectional as well. They go up one direction, come back, and go around the other. So. You know, most of our command ground stations are along the equator. Anything further south than that, you know, we call that ingress and egress. So, you know, whenever you have your ingress and egress, whenever you're that far south, you're pretty much out of ops because you're not really looking at anything down there.
Got you.
Very interesting. Chuck, I want to ask you, man, what's your thoughts on the planet Nibiru?
Planet
Nibiru. I mean, there's been talk about, you know, about Nibiru or Planet X or, you know, whatever you want to call
whatever it. Whatever the name is, whatever intent, yeah.
Right. But, yeah. You know, there's been, you know, that kind of talk for a very long time. And what is crazy, whenever we're talking about Planet X, you know, NASA and all them, they kind of been saying, no, there's no Planet X. There's no Planet X. And right after they were saying all that, this was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they were bringing all this up. This is whenever Pluto was still a planet, right? So Pluto's, you know, was the previous ninth planet. So if there would be another planet, it would be planet 10, and the Roman numeral for 10 is X. So that's maybe that's where it comes from. I'm not sure. But a lot of people have been finding, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to believe on TikTok anymore, to be honest with you.
But it's a dumpster fire.
It is a dumpster fire. There's no doubt about it. But there's supposedly footage that there is maybe a second sun going on up there. That there's like a whole nother object. I mean, would NASA, would the Space Force, would, you know, SpaceX, would anybody tell us about this stuff? I mean,
if we could reach it, I'm sure we would want to find the truth, you know.
It doesn't matter.
It takes a long time.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, you know, actually reaching it. I'm just, you know, talking about like notifying us of its possible existence.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think civilian space exploration, they want to get to the ground truth, and I don't know if you're tracking the James Webb Space Telescope, getting ready to launch in about a month and a half from French Guiana. It's supposed to be the Hubble 2, basically, but this thing is huge. It looks like a Starship Destroyer. It's got a giant honeycomb radar dish that sits on top. It's got like 20 something panels, and the thing sits on a platform that looks like a Starship Destroyer, and it's massive. Wow. And its sole purpose is to look interplanetary. You know, it's supposed to look beyond the solar system and to discover new things. And I would assume, you know, if they were trying to find ground truth for things, they would most likely utilize that vehicle to look at things more closely.
Now, I also want to ask you about Mars.
Mars, let's do it.
Right. So I know that's been a long time, long standing thing that we need to get to Mars, not just we as America, but we as humans, understandably so. Now, I've heard that there is crystallized methanol on Mars. And that the overall scheme of this is to get us to Mars, to set up a ground base there, to be able to harvest and process this methanol, use it as a fuel source to launch from Mars outside to other planets. Because once you get there, you're past the atmosphere. The hard part of breaking through is gone. You can take that and pretty much launch from that point onward. if and when the time comes, would the Space Force be the one to head that base operation? Is that something that's completely sci-fi at this point? What is your take on this?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask. And I do know, like, just from, you know, conversations that I've seen, open forums between Space Force and civilian space exploration. So we're very much supporters of the Mars exploration program. We're definitely supporters of, you know, Elon Musk going to Mars and doing this for mankind kind of thing. Whether or not we'll head it up, I don't know. I don't know if there will be a Guardian, you know, on the space shuttle to go out to Mars as part of the force enhancement. You know, we provide a lot of resources and special techniques and special expertise and a lot of science-based stuff in the Space Force. Will a Guardian be on a mission to go to Mars? Maybe not during the first round, but in the future, especially if it's successful enough and we can find reliable transportation, I think those risks are something that we would be willing to, you know, accept and continue doing.
Now, you said that the Space Force is pro Elon Musk trying to get to Mars.
Yeah, we've been supportive of their launch systems. In fact, like, we've been thinking of utilizing the space launch vehicle itself to bring cargo to our areas that are deployed overseas. So you see the Starship now, the way it's built going to Mars. Well, we're going to try to incorporate that same technology and load it up with a ton of cargo and use that as a means to ship, like, most of our equipment from stateside to, you know, whatever country we're in for mobile deployment purposes. Yeah.
That blows my mind that the Space Force is actually pro Elon Musk trying to get to Mars. I figured y'all would be like, nah, that's our ball.
No, I mean, so, you know, our partnership with the civilian industry is pretty significant, you know, and we don't have any boundaries or ties down to them, you know, that we obviously allow them to do, not really allow, I guess it's a bad word, but, you know, support them to do whatever they want, you know, and that's really their prerogative. The benefit of it is that they develop technologies that the government can then buy into if we really wanted to. And I believe a lot of that red tape has already been kind of cut through because we've purchased, you know, SpaceX Falcon 9 rockets to send our folks up to the International Space Station. We do the resupply missions with them. There's constant competition between other companies. You know, Jeff Bezos just threw a huge fit about the contract going to the moon and other mission types. So, you know, that competition is directly tied to the Space Force and what we're going to be, you know, I guess in support of or in conjunction with. So we got a lot of really great endeavors moving forward between government and civilian space. I think in previous years and previous decades, it's always been faux pas, right? Government and civilian has always been like, oh, that's bad. Like, we don't want to, you know, tie our hands to civilian relationships. You know, that's like a power influence kind of thing. I don't think it's going to be that way this time. I think it's going to be a sharing, you know, of the technologies and a sharing of similar, you know, things, if you will.
Well, that makes sense to me as well, because you look at, for instance, two of my friends actually were a part of the design and build process for those Falcons at Stennis Air Force Base, as a matter of fact. And I mean, there's no way that you'll have enough Space Force representatives, military or not, that can be rocket scientists that want to be in military capacity. You're just not going to have it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting world. We're a very junior service.
Right.
I'm still learning a lot about the legalities of things, you know, and
I think your entire branch of the collective is learning a lot about the legalities of things.
Right? Yeah. I mean, for the past 50, 60 years or, you know, plus, we've been doing a lot, you know, within the guise of the Air Force, and we've been doing a lot with civilian partnerships. And I guess I should say more commercial partnerships. And, you know, we've been encouraging that commercial partnership, but not so much now as we are in the Space Force. I think there's a stronger relationship now with commercial space industry and, you know, those relationships. But, you know, the one thing that we do keep in mind, obviously, is if we're going to associate ourselves with a commercial industry, we're going to make sure that we do have our red tape is got to be involved for safety, of personnel and safety of the missions. And because, you know, Falcon 9 is launching from Space Force bases. They're using our launch sites. Our guardians are on the control suites that are managing the launch site, you know, for commercial rockets. So there has to be a cohesive relationship between the two. Otherwise, you end up losing the strategic advantage that the commercial industry provides for us as a whole.
I could also see y'all being okay with the civilians being the one taking the fall if shit goes wrong. So, hey, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Yeah. They pay the bill. We just, like, accept it.
Yeah, if y'all's technology works, we might buy it. If not, hey, it's not us, man. Yeah.
It's not us.
Right. Just learn from everybody else's mistakes. That,
yeah.
Hey, oh, ain't nothing wrong with that. I do want to ask you, I mean, we are coming up on the end here, but I do want to ask you just one more alien question. It's kind of been
on my
mind. All right. So now if there is aliens, UFO, whatever you want to call them, Nephilim, Anunnaki, lizard people, right. I don't know. Whatever you want to call them, you know, adrenochrome junkies. I don't know. if there are, I mean, I believe there are.
Which we know of, yeah.
Right. I'm kind of in the belief that we are. Who, in what line of command, or what on the line of need to know? I mean, how far down the line are you as far as needing to know that information? Like, if the top guy at the Space Force.
Right.
Right. If he knows, I don't know what they're called. The
General Raymond.
Okay. Yeah. So if he finds out, oh my God, there's freaking aliens, and we gotta, you know, go starship battle kind of shit going on, right? If there is that, how far down the line is it until you find out that information?
What's your question? What's your security clearance, if you don't mind me asking, or is that classified?
Not classified. I do hold a higher clearance, so you can take that for what you will.
When I was in DC, I had a TS. That's why I'm asking. Yeah. I don't know. That was another question, a caveat off of you.
Yeah.
Being in the Space Force, you have to have a higher clearance, even at the lower levels, because it's the Space Force?
No. Well, so if you're in satellite operations, yeah, a lot of our operators require higher classification to do some of the systems that we have.
Yeah.
Our operations floors typically go up to a higher classification, but only require you to have access to lower classification stuff. So, yeah, there's some definite operation centers that operate at a higher classification, just so that way we can maintain that national security. You know, that's really truly what it's about, is maintaining national security from the bad guys. We don't want the bad guys to know what our capabilities are, because we 100% we're defending the nation. We're defending guys like you, so you can keep doing this.
Right.
And you know, we're watching all the time. So
as far as that goes, you're saying you would know about it pretty quickly.
Yeah, depending on, you know, the severity of the nature between the exposure of the alien force.
Right.
Definitely would know, you know, pretty abruptly. How far am I down the line currently in my position here? I'd probably be like maybe secondary or tertiary, you know, down the line. I would find out at some point. Maybe not like the first guy that would find out, but at some point I would.
Right.
You know, that's just kind of the way it is.
Interesting.
My mission here is more education focused. So we're developing guardians here with building programs for bachelor's and master's degree equivalents. Even on our enlisted force, we're looking at developing those guardians from the ground up, you know, with associates and bachelor's degrees and master's degrees. So that's kind of where my focus is now. But I come from a long line of space operations and, you know, being kind of behind closed doors. And I plan to go back. That's why the weapons school program is coming up in my future. So,
gotcha.
Chuck, if you find out there's aliens, I want you to let your boys over at the Cult of Conspiracy know this.
Yeah, I have a TikTok video on this. Like, somebody had asked me the question about it, and I was like, hey, if you find one, let me know, because I want to know too. You know, right. Not just because I wear the uniform, but because I'm actually really interested. If there is a freaking alien, like, let me know.
I mean, dude, you're like in the Space Force. I would feel like that would be the number one thing that I would want to know, if there's aliens.
If we find out, there's a problem. Okay.
Yeah, feel like there's like people like, dude, I know the Space Force guy. There's an alien right here. We got to call him. You know, like they wouldn't call the actual police. They'd call me the Space Force guy.
No, you
know,
I would not call the police if I found an actual. Right. That'd be the opposite of what I would do.
No, yeah. What are they going to do? Right. They're interdimensional, dude. They can't be shot.
I went to high school with most of the cops around here. I am not calling those assholes. You're out of your mind.
One more question, Chuck, I do want to ask you, and then I'll let you go. Now, of course, you know, the entire time that you've been in the military, I'm sure that you have not tried any recreational drugs. I do want to know, maybe before you got into the military, did you ever try taking any mushrooms, any LSD, anything like that to possibly come in contact with any of these, maybe some aliens, maybe, I don't know. I took mushrooms one time. I was contacted by the Elohim. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just curious as to what... I'm just curious.
I'm learning a lot about you. I'm learning a lot about you just in this one short hour. Yes. Recreational drug use before the military was definitely there. It wasn't that extensive, you know, just some green every once in a while. I didn't hit the hard stuff just because I had plenty of friends that did. And I saw what it did to them. And I was like, no way, man, that's not for me. Like, my parents would kill me, right?
Sure. Well, that's why I stick with what grows on the earth. You know, that's why I say mushrooms. Yeah. I'm not going to try acid, dude. I don't trust what's cooked up in the lab.
Yeah.
But if it comes from the ground, dude, I'm all about it. I just wanted to ask you about that. Because
post-military career, you know, we'll see what happens from there. It helps with PTSD, is what they say.
Yes, absolutely. When you get out, I mean, you say you're right there in Alabama. Let's have a shroom trip, dude.
Oh, my God. I'm
out of life. Anyway, all right. Yeah, we have our fun here on this show, but thank you so much.
No, that's cool.
Give your TikTok a shout-out. Give your channel a shout-out, whatever it is, shameless plug. Where can people find you? Where can people find your content?
Yeah, absolutely. So on TikTok, you can find me as the Fave Space Force Captain. It's short for Favorite Space Force Captain. It's kind of like my hashtag. I have a Facebook group that's called What's Up Chuck. I typically post, you know, everything that I can about space or, you know, good news stories or Space Force stuff. It's a small group. It's like 500 some people in it right now, but it's growing every day. You can find me on social media. Just look up Chuck Ruffin, or if you really want to get in touch with me, you can Google my wife's name, Alyssa Ruffin. And her whole entire everything about her music career will pop right up. And if you go to her social media, you know, you'll find me through her. So,
awesome. Yeah. Lovely. Thank you so much, Chuck, for coming on the show. I told everybody that I've ever met that I'm having a Space Force come on the show. So,
cool.
One of the coolest interviews we've ever had. There's no doubt about
it. Well, good. So. Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't, for me, it wasn't boring. I mean, these are all questions that I get quite frequently, you know, and I'm always willing to have a conversation about them. I'm not like a huge jerk about them. I'm not like, no, you're wrong. You know, these things aren't real. You got to believe what's really happening. No, I mean, just hang out with me. That's all I care about, you know, and just if we had a beer in front of each other, I'd be drinking a beer with you guys too. So.
Hell yeah. You know, I'd be open to another show with you sometime in the future if you happen to stumble across some alien footage. But anyway, thank you, Chuck, for coming on the show. It was awesome. We had so much fun doing this show.
Absolutely.
This was another beautiful episode of The Cult of Conspiracy. My name's Jonathan.
I'm Jacob.
And this was Captain Chuck Ruffin of the Space Force. We always want to remember one very important, extremely vital piece of information. Open up that third eye.